I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Rotem Malach of the World Zionist Organization, discussing the Israeli Supreme Court. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Mevinah on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Shinchinim, Chaim Ninachi, and Tamir Shakuri. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I know that the baseball season ended last week with the conclusion of a spectacularly good World Series, but I would be deeply remiss if I failed to note the particularly Jewish quality of this 2017 Fall Classic. Baseball is the most Jewish of American sports, with Hall of Fame heroes like Hank Greenberg and Sandy Koufax, and deep team allegiances that span the Jewish generations. The World Series has highlighted that from time to time, especially back in the days when the series often coincided with the Jewish High Holy Days, and you would look out at a congregation on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and see earbuds with the World Series game being played quietly during Rosh Hashanah or Yom Kippur services. Memorably, Sandy Koufax sat out Yom Kippur in 1965, making him a hero to every Jewish kid and every congregational rabbi in America. Jews are prominent in other major American sports, of course, like basketball, where nearly half of all NBA owners are Jewish, as is NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, or the NFL, where both owners in last year's Super Bowl were Jewish. But it is baseball that has always been closest to the American heart. And this year's tremendous World Series was highlighted by the unique accomplishments of two Jewish players, one for each team. Houston Astros second-year infielder Alex Bregman had the first ever walk-off hit by a Jewish player in the World Series when his RBI single drove home a pinch runner to lead the Astros to an epic 13-12 10-inning win over the Los Angeles Dodgers in Game 5 of the 2017 series, one of the best games ever in the World Series. Bregman's game-winning single came with two outs off the Dodgers' great closer, Kenley Jansen. Alex Bregman grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, at Congregation Albert, the Reform Synagogue there. His father and uncle played college ball at the University of New Mexico. That's how they got to Albuquerque. His grandfather was the general counsel for the Washington Senators in the late 60s until the team moved to Texas in 1971 in a sale that he negotiated. In fact, Alex Bregman's Zadie also helped the Senators sign Hall of Famer Ted Williams as their manager. Bregman himself was the second overall pick in the first round of the 2015 Major League Draft and was called up to the big leagues last July. But Alex Bregman wasn't the only Jewish player making headlines in the World Series. In Game 4, Dodger outfielder Jock Peterson's three-run homer in the ninth stretched the Dodgers' lead to 6-1. It was followed in the bottom of the inning by another homer from Bregman, bringing the final score to 6-2. But both players homered multiple times in the series. That's the first World Series in which two Jewish players have homered at all. In fact, before this year, the last Jewish player to hit a World Series home run was A's pitcher Ken Holtzman in the 1974 series against the Dodgers, kind of a startling one from a pitcher 43 years ago. That, by the way, is the first World Series I ever attended, although I didn't go to that game. Alex Bregman is 23 years old. Jock Peterson, who grew up in Palo Alto, California, was bar mitzvahed there, is 25 years old. His dad, Stu Peterson, also played briefly for the Dodgers in the 1980s. And, by the way, Game 4 of the 2017 World Series produced another record, the first one in World Series history in which two Jewish players homered. Some other Jewish facts about this year's World Series. The last World Series with two Jewish players in it at all before this was 2011, 6 years ago. Ian Kinsler, a past guest of Two Jewish, played, and so did Scott Feldman, both for the Texas Rangers. The last time two Jewish players were on opposite teams was the 2004 World Series. Gabe Kapler's Boston Red Sox swept Jason Marquis's St. Louis Cardinals. There's more about Gabe Kapler later on this Two Jewish show, by the way. While Alex Bregman's homer off Clayton Kershaw in Game 1 of the series was that first Jewish home run since 1974 in a World Series game, when Peterson homered to break up a no-hitter in Game 2 of the series, it was the first Jewish home run since Game 1 the night before. And Game 2 in the World Series was the first time in all of World Series history, well over 100 years, that two different Jewish players drove in runs. Peterson and Bregman are the first Jewish duo to homer at least twice apiece in the series, three times for Peterson, by the way. And one more interesting fact, Larry Sherry, Sandy Koufax, and Steve Yeager remain the only Jewish players who have won the World Series Most Valuable Player Award, and all did so while playing for the Los Angeles Dodgers. It should be noted that Jock Peterson is close to his older brother, Champ Peterson, who has Down syndrome, and Jock Peterson calls him an inspiration in his whole life. Champ Peterson has become a favorite of the other Dodger players in the clubhouse as well. Mazel tov to the Houston Astros on winning this outstanding and surprisingly Jewish World Series. On this wave of Jewish baseball's celebration, both sides of the World Series, it was inevitable that to play us in this morning, we have to end the baseball season with Mandy Patinkin's version of Take Me Out to the Ballgame and God Bless America, both staples of every ballgame, both with Jewish authors, sung in Yiddish.
Koyf mir den Nislof von Cracker Jack Will ich kein Wolf und dort nicht weg Ich seh gut, mut, mut, die Ballspieler Es passt nicht, als nun verspielt Weil sie seh, zwei, drei Spikes Neues bei der Baseballspiel America, land wo sich lieb, steh je bei ihr, madrig sei ihr, überall echter Strahl und Schlieb. Von die Berge zu den Prairies, bis die Arme meist mit Schau.
That was a rousing musical conclusion to the baseball season. Take Me Out to the Ballgame with words by a Jewish author, God Bless America, words and music by Irving Berlin, and a tribute to Jock Peterson and Alex Bregman, Jewish stars of the recent World Series. See you in spring training. Our guest this morning from the World Zionist Organization is Rotem Malach, discussing an extremely important institution in Israel that is not well understood here in America, the Israeli Supreme Court. Find out just how important it is, how it shapes and changes Israeli society when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish. Did you know there's a fabulous art gallery at the Tucson Jay? The Jay's Gallery features the work of local, regional, and national artists in a rotating exhibit throughout the year. Local artist Myra Marty Jeffrion, former head of the art department at the University of Arizona, presents Arizona Portraits, an exhibit which focuses on the unique characteristics and personalities of people, regional birds and animals, which are combined into quilt-like groupings. One highlight in the collection is a triptych portrait of former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. The Jay's Fine Art Gallery and the beautiful Sculpture Garden both open year-round, treasures waiting to be explored by all. The Tucson Jay. There is something for everyone, open to all. For more information, call 520-299-3000. That's the Tucson Jay, 299-3000. We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish. Our guest this morning, Rotem Malach, is an expert on the Israeli Supreme Court. He's Director of North American Activities for the Department of Diaspora Activities for the World Zionist Organization. He has worked as a representative of the WZO and the Progressive Movement in Israel. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So I think that most American Jews and most Americans have no idea how the Israeli Supreme Court works. I'm not sure they understand how the American Supreme Court works, but for sure they don't understand the institution in Israel. Can you explain clearly what it exactly is and how it works?
So the Supreme Court works in parallel to the executive and the legislators in Israel. And basically, the Supreme Court its main role is to monitor and to check the decisions and the laws made by other public authorities in the state of Israel. And it started after the legislation of two basic laws. Major basic law that was legislated and gave lots of power to the Supreme Court called Human Dignity and Liberty. And since this basic law has been legislated, the Supreme Court made lots of different rulings regarding different laws and decisions made by the mostly the Knesset and the government of Israel. So I would say that the main role of the Supreme Court is to monitor, to check whether laws of the Knesset, of the Parliament of Israel, and decision of the government are legal.
Israel doesn't have a constitution, unlike the United States, although England doesn't have a constitution. There are certain basic laws, but does not having a constitution mean that the Supreme Court is more important, do you think, or less important?
I think that the fact that Israel has no constitution, it put the Supreme Court in a very vulnerable position because those two basic laws can theoretically be canceled or changed in a regular majority in the Knesset of Israel. So unlike the Constitution of America, if the Senate wants to or the President wants to change the Constitution, they need to have a certain majority. In Israel, there's no like a special majority that is being required to change or to cancel those two basic laws. And without those two basic laws, the Supreme Court of Israel won't be capable of disqualifying laws or decisions made by the Knesset or the government of Israel. So the Supreme Court is important mostly because of the legal infrastructure that enables him to be so active, and this infrastructure is the two basic laws.
When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll continue to discuss the Israeli Supreme Court with Rotem Malach of the World Zionist Organization in just a moment here on Two Jewish.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
The Tucson J has something for everyone. Open to all, the J serves the entire Tucson community with an enriching early childhood education and after-school J care program and robust state-of-the-art fitness center, arts and culture classes, sports and recreation, and much more. The J is not just a gym. We offer Jewish programs and holiday celebrations, concerts, lectures, and a beautiful sculpture garden and fine art gallery. The J provides a Hamish atmosphere steeped in Jewish identity and values. Stop by, take a tour, and see what we have to offer. The Tucson J, 3800 East River Road, or TucsonJCC.org.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at TooJewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows, streaming them from our website or downloading them from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in North America, according to Moment magazine. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, we started talking last week about Chabad and its shlichut, its representation, sending rabbis and rebbetzins out to start Jewish life in areas of, for example, the former Soviet Union after the fall of the Soviet bloc, and its new openness to religious expression. Chabad went everywhere, and it continues to do so. It continues to send out representatives to new areas. You mentioned college campuses, lots of places in which they can begin to create Jewish life in their own model. Other movements have been different in their approach. The Reform movement, for example, did begin pretty quickly, including a friend of mine, a guy you know too, Rabbi David Wilfon. Gingy was the first Reform rabbi to start a congregation in Kiev, you know, and many other places in the Eastern Europe. There have been the beginnings of these kinds of Reform congregations starting, not as successfully as Chabad, because Reform rabbis don't go on shlichut and don't then go and raise their own salaries. You know, they have to be supported by a different kind of infrastructure. But not every movement has done that. What other kinds of Jewish life have been created in these places, and what movements maybe have been kind of late to the table?
Right. Well, I would say one thing that the Reform movement and Chabad have in common, although probably neither would embrace this idea, is that at least in Eastern Europe, they've been pretty universal, pretty quick, and pretty broad-minded about the question of who is a Jew and who do you welcome to the congregation or the community or whatever, without giving an official ID card. I think that neither Chabad nor the Reform movement looks too closely at, well, are both your parents Jewish? Was your mother Jewish? This sort of halakhic question that Israel is struggling with in terms of who's a Jew. And even the children of converts, if you were converted by one rabbi, you're okay. If you were converted by another rabbi, you're not okay. It's like Chabad, ultimately, before you got married or became a rabbi with Chabad, they might care about those things. But in terms of participating in Jewish communal life, they're very inclusive. And I think that's true of the Reform movement. It's also less true of other movements. And I think we'd be remiss here. Okay, so the implication is that mainstream orthodoxy and the conservative movement have been way behind the eight ball. They've been slower. They've been more selective about where they go. Their presence in the rare places where there is one is not nearly as high profile as Chabad and the Reform movement. But there are also other organizations that are not movements of Judaism per se, but foundations like the Lauder Foundation. I mean, a very close friend of mine worked for virtually a decade as country director in Germany for the Lauder Foundation. And the Lauder Foundation wasn't so much about making people Jewish again. It was reviving the institutions of Jewish communal life that were destroyed by the Holocaust. So that meant
schools, Jewish community centers,
old folks' homes, community centers, right. Cemeteries that were maybe desecrated or just ignored, things that hadn't been active for 50 years or in some cases longer. The Lauder Foundation funded the renovation of, the reconstruction, even if the pool of potential users was much smaller. And sure enough, I mean, when Chabad came along and other groups that sort of got Jews to come out of the closet, these community structures were used by more and more people. And the numbers of Jews or people who identified as Jews grew dramatically and in a way that I think few of us would have predicted in that part of the world.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Thanks, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Shin Shinim, representatives of Israel and representing the Weintraub Israel Center, Chen Denachi and Tamir Shakuri. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
So there are youth organizations in the United States, like the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, but in Israel, youth movements are very, they're different. They're much more inclusive and intensive. Lots of Israelis are part of them. Let's talk about your own involvement in youth movements.
Hi. So,
Hi.
So I'm a part of the Scouts ever since I was in fourth grade, which is the earliest age you can go to the Scouts.
And Scouts are Tzofim is the term?
Scouts are Tzofim, yeah. So the Tzofim in Israel is a little bit different. We don't have girl Tzofim and boy Tzofim. We just have like everyone together. And one of the biggest values in the movement is that you don't discriminate anyone with any difference of race, religion, and gender. And I think it's a really, really neat set of values to teach children. And you do all kinds of activities, and it's a lot more popular, I think, because like in my grade, I know only about 50 kids who don't go out of 350.
Wow. So it's really like everybody, not everybody, but almost everybody joins the Scouts.
Yeah, and I think it's good because it's a good influence on everyone, and you kind of have your friends from the Scouts, and overall, I think that youth movements are a really good opportunity to evolve.
And there's no merit badges in Tzofim in Israel.
No badges.
You don't end up with a chest full of merit badges for having done built a raft or made a fire.
No, you build a fire. Good for you. Keep going.
Build another one. Tamir, you're in a different organization, a famous organization for those of us who have followed the history of the Zionist movement, HaShomer HaTzair. Can you explain that a little bit?
So the Tzofim is the biggest youth movement in Israel, but there are many more. And my school is actually under the umbrella of HaShomer HaTzair. But I actually go and I'm more exposed to the values of the Agricultural Union, or in his Hebrew name, Haichud, HaChaklai. Mm-hmm. And in my youth movement, it feels like it's very much similar to a lot of other youth movements. We do activities. We meet twice a week, once to prepare activities and once to actually perform them with our,
So what kind of activities would you do in the Agricultural Union?
So it might sound like we take them on the field and plant some seeds.
Yes,
but
that's right. Uh-huh.
We actually have we play a lot of games, and we talk about loving the country and loving the land and being together. And actually this year we did do a project that we built our own like little garden, but you can do it in any youth movement. And I think the values that are leading my youth movement is that is non-political. You have your own, you can choose your own opinion and you can form your own opinion by what you think. And it encourages everyone to think creatively and think by themselves, but while loving the land and loving the country and loving each other and appreciating each other.
So it builds all the values that you're trying to inculcate. And the youth movements are, I think they're really ubiquitous. Like it seems like everybody's in some kind of youth movement program in Israel. Mm-hmm. Thanks very much. And we will talk next week.
Thank you. See you next week.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I'm miss seeing people. Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays I do yoga. Wednesdays we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week, Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A very wealthy, observant Jewish man just finished building his 50-room mansion. Naturally, needs to put up a mezuzah on every door. So he calls his carpenter and asks him to bring a couple of assistants to install the mezuzahs while he himself goes on vacation. When he returns, he finds a note on the kitchen counter from the carpenter. It reads, "Dear Mr. Friedman, we put up all the little boxes for you. We had a hard time getting the instructions out of every one, but the papers are in your top drawer." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. You see, mezuzah is on the doorway because it has a parchment inside with a Shema and the Ve'ahavta on it, and the contractor took out all the parchments and... never mind. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Chaye Sarah, which marks a transition in the Genesis narrative from the tales of Abraham and Sarah, our first Jewish father and mother, towards the next generation, which will feature Isaac and Rebekah. But first, we begin with an ending. At the start of the portion, we're told of the length of Sarah's life, and almost by accident, we learn of Sarah's death. The life of Sarah was 100 years and 20 years and 7 years, our Torah portion begins, and a famous midrash on it tells us that Sarah was just as beautiful at the age of 100 as she was at 20, that she was just as free of sin at 20 as she had been at 7. It's a fine encomium for a significant figure who has passed now from the scene. Chaye Sarah is a portion filled with negotiations that will have great influence on the future of the fledgling religion, someday to be known as Judaism. The first extended section of Chaye Sarah is dedicated to arranging for Sarah's funeral. Abraham purchases the cave of Machpelah in Hebron, the first piece of real estate owned by our people, and what will eventually be known as the Land of Israel. That cave becomes the burial place not only for Sarah, but for most of the patriarchs and matriarchs. Abraham, Sarah, Isaac, Rebekah, Jacob, and Leah eventually all find their final resting place in Hebron. In Chaye Sarah, the purchase of this plot involves an extended bargaining session with a Hittite who owns it and the payment of a huge sum for this first permanently Jewish land in the world, establishing Jewish legitimacy in the Middle East at a very early point in history. I visited the Cave of Machpelah twice, once many years ago when you could go into the cave itself, and again about 3 years ago when Jews were only permitted by the Israeli authorities to go into the area above the cave for fear of creating a violent incident. It's still a powerful and strange place. Well, after the burial in the Torah portion, our narrative moves forward with one last important detailed episode of Abraham's life. Abraham is old. He sees that his son Isaac has not married, perhaps is unlikely to do so without parental intervention. Abraham charges his trusted servant to go back to the old country of Sumeria, Haran, in eastern Turkey, just north of today's Syria, and bring back a suitable girl for Isaac to marry and carry on the line of believers in the one true God. After a long journey and the first extended prayer in the Torah, the servant meets Rebecca drawing water from the city well in Haran. He knows that she is the one for Isaac because she shows generosity and intelligence. He too bargains, in this case with Rebecca's duplicitous father and brother. Eventually, the servant arranges for her to become Isaac's wife. But at the crucial moment of the narrative, Rebecca's family puts a question to her. Will you go with this man? That is, will she leave all she's known and journey to an unknown land and future husband? This final negotiation of Chaye Sarah is brief. Rebecca agrees quickly. Yes, she will leave the homeland and her father's house and go to the land that will be shown to her. Like Abraham before her, she embraces this call to begin a new life. And so she goes and meets Isaac, and the future of the people and of monotheism is assured. These three negotiations revolve around crucial elements in our people's history: land, descendants, and destiny. Without title to the land of Israel, we would have remained homeless wanderers. Without descendants, we would have ceased to be. And without the courageous choice of women and men, like Rebecca and Abraham, our destiny would have been to disappear. As Jews, these remain our principal goals today, and often they still require negotiation to achieve a secure land of Israel, our children and grandchildren's commitment to Judaism, and the destiny of our people as a moral light to the nations. They are great goals, and we all must continue to work to achieve them. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Rotem Malach of the World Zionist Organization, will explore recent decisions of the Israeli Supreme Court that are transforming Israeli society. Find out what they are and how they work when we come back in a moment right here on To Jewish.
The Tucson J has something for everyone. Open to all, the J serves the entire Tucson community with an enriching early childhood education and after-school J care program and robust state-of-the-art fitness center, arts and culture classes, sports and recreation, and much more. The J is not just a gym. We offer Jewish programs and holiday celebrations, concerts, lectures, and a beautiful sculpture garden and fine art gallery. The J provides a Hamish atmosphere steeped in Jewish identity and values. Stop by, take a tour, and see what we have to offer. The Tucson J, 3800 East River Road, or TucsonJCC.org.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
There is even more Jewish sports news this week, some not so good, some very good. In the United Arab Emirates, two senior sporting officials from the UAE apologized after one of the country's competitors refused to shake hands with an Israeli opponent at a judo tournament. Politics threatened to overshadow sports during Abu Dhabi's Judo Grand Slam, given that the UAE has no diplomatic ties with Israel and, like most other Arab countries, doesn't recognize Israel as a state. But five Israeli athletes won medals, only to be greeted by the official music and flag of the International Judo Federation while standing on the podium instead of hearing Hatikva and seeing the Israeli flag. Compounding matters, a UAE athlete declined to shake hands with Israel's Tohar Butbul, an eventual bronze medalist in the competition, following their first-round match. But in a move branded historic by the International Judo Federation, Israel Judo Association President Moshe Ponte met afterwards with Mohammed bin Talub al-Darey, president of the UAE's Judo Federation. Ponte and al-Darey shared greetings and positive discussion. This was a gesture of courage, humanity, and respect for the sport, said International Judo Federation President Marius Weiser. They apologized because of the UAE athletes not shaking hands with the Israeli athletes and congratulated the Israeli team for their success here. Israel's male half-lightweight judoka, Tal Flicker, found particular success in Abu Dhabi, beating more established names to win the gold medal. He made global headlines, however, for singing Hatikva alone atop the podium in the absence of the national anthem being played. It was weird, Flicker said. Israel's my country. I'm proud to be from Israel. I sang Hatikva because I don't know anything else. This is my anthem. Flicker and his 11 compatriots competing at the Elite International event were forced to wear judo uniforms without the flag symbols of their nationality, despite the International Judo Federation contacting the president of the UAE Federation, insisting all delegations be treated absolutely equally. Well, in spite of the anthem and flag and lack of a handshake controversies, Flicker and his team were treated well, given the delicate issues between the two nations. I consider that even without the flag and anthem of Israel, their team has been treated well and with high respect during this event, said Judo Federation President Weiser, who added that the IJF has made important steps for the participation and recognition of the Israeli team in recent years. 2 years ago, we achieved the first participation of an Israel team in Abu Dhabi, he said. Now it's the second time, but a much better approach. I hope in the near future we can achieve the best condition of participation for the Israeli teams. I hope soon we can break down more barriers for more tolerance between countries and nations to express the real value of the sport, friendship, unity, and solidarity. Amen. And after such a Jewish World Series with Alex Bregman and Jock Peterson, there's a final Jewish baseball note this week. Gabe Kapler, a Major League outfielder for 12 years and a coach for Team Israel in the World Baseball Classic, was named manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. Kapler played for 7 teams in his career. He has been the head of player development for the LA Dodgers since 2014. He was a finalist for their job 2 years ago as manager. I'm equal parts honored, humbled, and excited by the opportunity with the Phillies, an elite franchise in a city rich in history, tradition, sports excellence, and with amazingly passionate fans, Kapler said. Phillies are actually bad, but maybe they'll get better. Kapler, who is 42, is Jewish, has a tattoo of a Jewish star on his left leg. Little interesting that. And another one that reads Never Again, a reference to the Holocaust, on his other leg. Kapler coached the Israelis during the 2013 WBC's qualifying period. He was invited to travel through Israel with the national team earlier this year. Kapler had never been to Israel before. He called the visit an extraordinary life experience and added that his trip to Yad Vashem left him emotional for days after. In 2006, Gabe Kapler was one of 4 Jewish players on the Boston Red Sox roster, along with Kevin Youkilis, Craig Breslow, and Adam Stern. Gabe Kapler replaces Brad Ausmus, fired by the Tigers earlier this year, as the only current Jewish manager in the big leagues. And that's the two Jewish news of Jews round the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning, Rota Malach, representative of the World Zionist Organization here in the United States. He's also worked for the Progressive Movement. And we're discussing the Israeli Supreme Court, which, by the way, has the most beautiful government building in Israel, I think, with the possible exception of the foreign ministry. Would you agree with that very important observation?
Oh, yeah. You really like the architecture of this building. I think it's very unique. And it's one of the latest public buildings that has been built in Israel. So the architecture is very updated.
It's very nice. It's much nicer than the Knesset, I have to tell you, even if it doesn't have Chagall tapestries. There have been some really crucial Supreme Court decisions in recent years. Can you tell us about some of them and how they have affected the course of Israeli public life?
Yes, so you know it's a perfect timing because yesterday or 2 days ago, the Supreme Court ruled about 2 very interesting topics. One of them is that restaurants can say to their customers that they are kosher, even though they don't carry an official certificate from the Israeli rabbinate. And second is that the current law that exempts religious people, ultra-Orthodox...
the Haredim from serving Haredim in the military, right?
Yeah, exactly, is unconstitutional.
Wow, that's kind of huge.
And this is right before the current president of the Supreme Court, Miriam Naor, is about to finish her position. So I believe that it was very important for her to rule about those 2 topics, and I think that it's a great example about the involvement of the Supreme Court in the Israeli society.
Now, the Israelis, the Supreme Court has had some crucial decisions in the past as well. I mean, if this actually is implemented, this decision, and Haredim, ultra-Orthodox, now have to serve in the military, it'll be transformational for Israeli society. We'll see, because the government has not always implemented everything the Supreme Court decrees. Does the government have to do what the Supreme Court says?
Yes, the answer is yes. Every ruling of the court, whether it's the Supreme Court or a lower court, is equivalent to a law. So the government and or any other authority or organization, any kind of entity, must obey to the ruling of the Supreme Court.
Tell us about some of there were rulings, for example, the Supreme Court made about the status of Israeli Arabs, about the status. I mean, can you tell us some of the other really important Supreme Court rulings that have changed Israeli society?
Oh, yes. I mean, I think that one of the major rulings is the Supreme Court enabled gay couples to register as legal gay married couple in Israel. I think this was a very progressive ruling. You know, many years before America settled this issue, the Supreme Court enabled to restaurants and businesses in Israel to sell pork, and maybe it doesn't sound so interesting or significant, but I remember back then in Israel it was a very, very big deal for the ultra-Orthodox and even for many citizens in the state of Israel. And when it comes to human rights versus security needs, we have, I think, the most active Supreme Court all over the world, you know, in protecting the values of human rights. Even when Israel was in a constant danger, the Supreme Court ruled that the military must respect human rights.
That's, for us and for Jewish values, a really powerful message. The Supreme Court tends to be a corrective on extremes in America. Does it serve the same purpose in Israel?
Yes. I mean, again, like legal-wise, the Supreme Court has the right and the authority, all the legal infrastructure to do so. And this is the main role of every Supreme Court in an advanced democratic nation, to correct decisions and laws that do not reflect basic human rights.
You mentioned that the term of the head of the Supreme Court is almost completed. In America, people are appointed to the Supreme Court for life. Occasionally they resign before they die, but not as often as you would expect. How long are the terms on the Supreme Court in Israel? How do you get appointed to the Supreme Court?
So Israel has a very unique way to select judges, and that's the only way that, according to now my knowledge, that's the only method that exists only in Israel. So there is an assembly that selects the judges. This assembly consists of representatives from the executive, the legislative, and of course the judicial system. The interesting and most significant thing is that the judicial system has a majority in this assembly, and it enables to the Supreme Court or to the judicial system to select judges mostly on a professional basis and not on a political basis. And I think that this is one of the reasons why the Supreme Court is very independent.
Because it's really on the basis of performance, not on the basis of. I mean, there should be some In America, it's supposed to be on the basis of performance too, but certainly there's a political component. There's really no political component in Israel in those choices?
I mean, you know, I always say that wherever you have people, you have, you know, political components. You cannot really separate them. But there's something very interesting. In all the major rulings of the Supreme Court, the majority of the judges that supported those different significant rulings was extreme. I'm talking about eight judges out of nine, or nine out of nine, or seven out of nine. So I think that, you know, there's like a diversity even within the judges. You know, they come from a different background, religious background, cultural background. You have a great diversity within the judges in the Supreme Court itself. But when it comes to very significant rulings, most of the judges supported the ruling. The way it resulted. So I think that this is a great indication to see that most of them made the decision based on professional basis and not political basis.
So a funny question: if there is, say, a corruption trial. Not that that would ever happen in Israel, of course, but if there was a corruption trial, is there the potential that it would go to the Supreme Court, or it wouldn't, because even if it was, say, for, just theoretically, the Prime Minister of Israel, would that go as high as the Supreme Court, or that wouldn't because it doesn't affect the basic law?
Okay, so you know, I mean, here we should refer to the very important democratic principle called rule of law, okay? So, you know, there are lots of investigations right now regarding our current prime minister. And if at the end of the day, at the end of this process, he will put in trial, so he will go through the same process as any other citizen, meaning that the procedure will start in the relevant court. Can be the lawyer court or it depends to the charges, but the prime minister or any other political figure will go through the same process as any other citizen.
Could such a case theoretically, let's say it ruled against, would such a case be in America? The appellate process would be that it could keep going up higher and higher. There may be some division of powers question. I would wager that such a case in America would go to the Supreme Court. Is that likely to happen in Israel?
Sure. I mean, I don't want to, you know, to refer to our current prime minister.
Of course.
I don't know what I would
a theoretical prime minister, right?
Yeah. I mean, so it depends. Like, he has the right, like any other citizen, to appeal, and if you appeal again and again, at the end of the day, you might find yourself appealing to the Supreme Court. It's a very fundamental right.
How is the Supreme Court regarded in Israeli society generally?
It's a very interesting question. I think that most of the Israelis are aware to the power. The unique, great power of the Supreme Court to rule against the government and the Knesset, but they are not aware to all the legal aspects and to the importance of those two basic laws that really, at the end of the day, protect them as citizens. Because once one of our public authorities is harming their human rights, they can have a potential remedy. So it's very common in Israel that if you will ask an average Israeli, you know, asking about the Supreme Court, it will tell you, yes, the Supreme Court has so much power against the Knesset and the government of Israel because of those very important rulings, you know, that and I spoke before about the two latest rulings of the Supreme Court. So the media covers them, and then there is lots of discussions in the Israeli media, and many ministers and Knesset members are talking against those rulings against the Supreme Court. So at the end of the day, most of the awareness about the Supreme Court among the Israelis is whether the rulings are bad or good. But one thing is certain: most of the Israelis are well aware to the power that the Supreme Court has, but I'm not sure that they are aware to the importance behind this power and to the importance of all those rulings and you know the division of power between the different authorities.
I want to thank Rotem Malach for a great visit here on Too Jewish, explaining the Supreme Court of Israel and its importance. I, by the way, I think that many Americans don't understand what the U.S. Supreme Court means either, so Israel's in good company, or broad company in any case. Where can people go to find out more about, well, first of all, the World Zionist Organization, but also about the Israeli Supreme Court?
So all the information is, of course, you can find it online. And if you would like to learn more about our organization, so you can find us on www.izionist.org/NA.
Thanks so much, Rotem. When we come back in a few moments, we'll hear about next week's guest and get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest on Too Jewish will be Joshua Max Feldman, the author of the new book, Start Without Me, a Jewish Thanksgiving-based novel in advance of Turkey Day. And of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from Israeli singer Maor Edri, his song, Tagidi Ma Kore Lach. Tell me, what happened to you? My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
בואי נגשים חלום ישן אחרי הים רחוק כחול לבן אז בואי נגשים חלום ישן זה רק אני ואת עכשיו עולה עולם שנינו ילדים גדולים אז בואי נשים הכל בצד תגידי לי מה את אומרת רוצה לכתוב עוד זיכרון איתך לבד זוכרת איך רצינו אז לרדוף אחרי השמש היינו ילדים חלום אחד אבול ברגל צריף קטן על חוף שאין בו חורף קיץ כל הזמן המים בגוון כחול ירוק מזמן אני ואת זה לעולם זוכרת הזמן רק ממהר הוא לא נרדם אז בואי נגשים חלום ישן זה רק אני ואת לבד או מול כולם גם אם תספרי קצת לעצמך את באה בשבילי תהי לנצח מאושרת אחרי הכל תמיד את רק תהי שלי זוכרת איך עשינו אז לרדוף אחרי השמש היינו ילדים חלום אחד דבול ברגל החוף שאין בו חורף קיץ כל הזמן המים בגוון כחול ירוק מזמן אני ואת זה לעולם זוכר
sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.